The future is no longer in your imagination.
Fostering an open forum.
Never heard anything like it before.
Urban 75 Radio.
This is Urban 75 Radio. Welcome to the beginning on May Day 2005. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll bring you a selection of broadcasts put together by urbanites. Mike Slocum's e-zine and the Urban 75 bulletin boards have created a hydra. So here we are, the Urban 75 Radio Collective, making online programming to reflect our community. We've got an interview with the editor, esoteric discussion from some of the Bristol crew, an offline special from the Dog Star in Brixton, alternative coverage of the election, a history of May Day, the Shagging and Diseases Forum on air, live music, beats and guitars from urbanite artists, and inevitably, lots, lots more. Urban 75 Radio KUK is the website. You can email us on info@urban75radio.co.uk. Tell us what you think, get involved, get on air, make us a programme. Coming up in this first show, we've got that interview with Mike Slocum, an hour of offline recorded last Thursday, and a May Day action special. This is Urban 75 Radio. We've even got a tagline. Baby-eating broadcasters.
Urban 75 Radio grew out of an idea from the Urban 75 bulletin boards. So what would be a better way to start the first show than with an interview with the editor himself? So we tracked him down one dark and stormy evening to the Albert in Brixton. And we apologise for the background noise in the interview, but pubs are a noisy place. And after trapping the editor in the corner and plying him with beer, we recorded the following conversation.
Here we are in the Albert in Brixton with Mike Slocum, Urban 75's illustrious leader. What made you start the Urban 75 in the first place? How did it come about?
Bit of a strange answer. It started on a cold Cardiff City terrace where back in 91 I was watching the Mighty Bluebirds, then a very poor, struggling third division team, and we were having a sort of an unusual run of good luck, and we were doing quite well, and there was a bumper crowd at Cardiff. And as a result, there was a really big crowd there. And for the first time I'd ever heard it at Cardiff, there was three racists behind me, did a sort of racist chant. I hadn't heard it at Cardiff, didn't like it one bit, and thought, well, what can I do to stop these people? And option one, you know, I say chaps and have my face filled in. And for some reason I came up with the idea of doing a football comic. I don't know why, because I'd never done a comic before. And the idea of the comic was really to kind of take the piss out of these people, to ridicule them, but also kind of really get across the point and kind of try and disassociate Cardiff from being what was popular perceived in the press as sort of a football hooligans team. So the first issue, I enrolled a couple of friends, one of which was a professional cartoonist who hated football but loved the idea of this comic. And the first issue was 32 pages, A4, and we did printed them up, all photocopied at home, sort of true DIY. Went up to Cardiff. I managed to blag a little bit of press in the local papers beforehand. And basically, most of the strips were attacking, you know, were basically taking the piss out of these characters. One of the main characters was a guy called 70s Man, who was these guys, basically. He was a character who'd been in a coma since 1970, and he'd returned to football, and he'd gone off to try and take the away end, which was a custom in those days. And basically, he was a complete idiot, and he was the laughing stock. Anyway, to cut a long story short, the first issue sold out in 3 hours. It bizarrely became the fastest-selling small press comic in Britain. And this was kind of before Fever Pitch made football trendy. So the magazine, we did 5 issues. It started getting featured in ID magazine, The Face, which is some achievement for Cardiff City. And around about issue 4, the Criminal Justice Act was proposed, the Dastardly Act. The Criminal Justice Bill was proposed, which was the Tory government stab at basically killing off most of the kind of alternative groups. So it attacked the ravers, it attacked street road protesters, a whole sort of swathe of people that the Tories didn't like the look of. And I kind of figured it was also going to affect football fans. And a lot of my friends who are in sort of the road protest movement didn't quite see it. But I cheekily launched my first campaign, which was called Football Fans Against the Criminal Justice Bill. When I say fans, it was me, but hey, no one knows. I faxed off a load of releases, press releases. I blagged a fax machine. We had, I think I sent about 80 press releases. Within 2 weeks, I ended up doing must have been 30 radio interviews, 3 TV interviews, and that was kind of my first ever campaign. So I kind of learned that DIY campaigning can work if you kind of research your facts and known and thought how it affects football fans. So the comic kind of followed that in, and the comic featured more strips about squatters and ravers and road protesters, and kind of, you know, trying to make the link that it's going to affect us all. By issue 5, the comic was pretty well known, and by that time I was doing a lot of work with the Criminal Justice Act campaign. Some guy in Brighton offered to do a website. See, I'm finally getting to the website here. Some guy in Brighton did a website, which is being 94, was absolutely shite. I mean, really, I mean, God bless him, because I had no idea how to do it. But he did this really basic website. But what annoyed me was every time I had to update it, I had to email him, and at his leisure, he'd update it, which was a real pain. And the whole beauty of the web, it's instant. So eventually I was really trying to get my head around it, but I don't know if anyone listening has tried to do HTML. If you're not from a techie background, it's pretty daunting stuff. And a true story here, I was actually in a party in Bath, completely drunk, and I woke up, and this is God's honest truth, stuck to my face was a page of HTML where someone who's ever, it was a student's house, had left a page on how to teach yourself HTML. So I nicked it, left a little note saying, I promise I'll send it back. Can I please, you know, do you mind? I'll nick it, I've got to learn it. I went back to London that night, did my first 3 pages of HTML, and I did send it back to the guy. And if I guess if I knew him, I should really thank him, actually. But so that was kind of the first introduction to web design. And I guess that was the start of trying to think, well, I can do it. Urban 75 was initially just the football stuff. And because of the Criminal Justice Act, which really I have to thank for an awful lot of stuff in my life, really was, I started to feature the road protests, where I was going, just like the football, where I'd go to a football game and the media would represent it one way. I'd say, well, no, this isn't what I saw. I actually had a really good time. I'm not a racist. And it was very similar with protests, where I go to, say, a Criminal Justice March, Bill March, and the papers would have, like, babe-eating anarchists, killers, psychos. And I think, well, no, I just met people who were very well informed about the issues, just going out and making a very valid political point. So that was really the genesis of Urban 75. It started as a football site and then kind of took on more and more issues and then kind of slowly grew to the monster you see now.
So why did you decide to add message boards to it?
Well, the first message board, actually, which probably no one will ever remember, was a football one. And really it was lesson one about the problem with message boards. It was very basic software. And it was, the idea was, this must be 96, it was really just a single page and you added a comment and it just came underneath the first one. And I thought it would be quite interesting to see how people responded and people would discuss the issues, but I was very mistaken. It was mainly full of, Cardiff City suck, you cunt. And really, that's not much of a conversation. And because the board was so basic, there wasn't an awful lot I could do to get rid of troublemakers. And I remember at one point I was working in New York. The whole site was hosted on a very small amount of web space. So once you went over that limit, the whole site went down. And some bloke was, I just caught him in the act, was busily putting up, you're a shithead, send. You're a shithead, send. Doing about 300, 400. And that's the point I cancelled the whole board. I just took him down and thought, this is too much trouble. And then they resurfaced, I can't remember where, 99, 2000, where the software was a bit more capable. So that's kind of where, why and when the boards came, really, because they're just a brilliant thing. If you run a site, you can't write it all yourself, and the whole point of a web is you want to hear other people's opinions.
So you view Urban 75 as an organic thing, not just your own creation anymore. It's more a community effort.
Well, it's a kind of weird thing. I mean, I've never ever had a plan for it. I mean, it started from football, and I've just added bits I like the look of. So, you know, the photographs went in, they're very popular. The bulletin boards have kind of, so I guess in a way it's almost it's almost split in half. You've got the bulletin board community, which is in part brought to the site by the rest of the content, because the site ranks, if you type in New York photos, Urban 75 comes number one. So a lot of people will kind of look at the photos and eventually drift into the bulletin board community. And I think, in a way, that explains why it's such a breadth of posters you get there, whereas if it was a political website, you generally get a very one-dimensional crowd. So I think it's the content of the rest of the site, the sort of .com part, feeds the bulletin boards and makes sure it, and sort of ensures it's quite diverse.
Okay, so now the site's really successful. You're not making loads of money off this. It's not for profit, no adverts, nothing like that. Why do you keep the boards going? What's in it for you?
I guess for me, in a way, the internet for me was, it was a great tool in 94, 95. I suddenly found it gave me a voice. Where I was a protester, normally that meant just shoving leaflets in people's hands. The web was suddenly a fantastic way I could reach, you know, potentially thousands, if not millions of people. And I have been lucky. I mean, through running the site, bizarrely, you know, I ended up getting work as a web designer, as a photographer, and as a writer. So, you know, I mean, it's not exactly phenomenally paid jobs, but it, you know, it's I managed to survive on it. So I figure, well, you know, the Urban 75 has given me a livelihood of sorts, indirect livelihood, and I've met top chums, and you know, it's also a passion. When the web first started, this is what I thought it could be. You know, I thought it'd all be that. And then the hideous adverts, the brought to you by an association with stuff started. And it's almost now like a sort of dogmatic point. I don't want this site to have adverts. And, you know, I want people, you know, I guess maybe kids, to look at the site and realize that, unlike most sort of major festivals now, it's not brought to you in association with anyone. You know, you don't have to have commercial sponsorship to make something that's good. So I guess that's part of it. And the other half is obsession, I guess. I like it, I do it. And for me, it's just rewarding. It's an outlet for my photography, for my writing, and, you know, for what creative skills I've got.
Do you ever wake up screaming in the night, going, why, oh God, why?
Regularly, yes. Yes, there are times. I mean, there was another bulletin board someone was telling me about where the owner had such a hissy fit, he actually closed the entire boards now for 3 weeks. I mean, the boards are a pain in the arse at times. You know, sometimes they're fantastic, sometimes they're dull, other times they're just amazing, just brilliant, funny, witty. And there are times where it just becomes the most gargantuan pain in the arse. But, you know, I guess that's the nature of the beast, really. You know, if you want nice, smooth, easy-going bulletin boards, well, they're going to be bland and boring. So I don't know why I do it. And there are times, certainly the other mods as well share the despair at times. I mean, we've had some fairly weird things going on. And, you know, I found myself featured in very strange things on other websites. But, you know, that's part of the territory, I guess. But I think I get enough love back to make me keep on wanting to do it. So God bless you all.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier it's not for profit, but the website's pretty unique in its content, its style. Do you think that sort of the style of community message board, this community website, do you think that's the future for the internet, or do you think you're just you're a one-off, you're a unique entity?
I wouldn't dare guess what the future of the internet is. If it is, I'd be off making fortunes somewhere. I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of other bulletin boards. You know, Urban 75 certainly isn't the most popular. I think what is unusual is that most bulletin boards are generally draped around a specific theme, you know, a car racing site or an entertainment site or a product site. But, I mean, I think it is slightly unusual in that aspect. It's not actually selling anything, and it's not trying to do anything other than just be what it is. So I've no idea where it's going. I never have had an idea. I think it is... I wouldn't say it's unique, but I think it is, you know, that there aren't many left that don't have any sort of commercial sponsorship deals or interlocking.
Okay, well, you've got a club night, you've got book groups, film groups, you've got hedge parties, squat parties, you've got numerous relationships.
Don't forget the knitting.
You've got the knitting club, the infamous knitting club. And now developing a radio station. That's pretty unique in terms of websites, community sites. What next?
I haven't got a clue, mate. I don't know. I mean, I was saying earlier, I think probably one of the reasons for its breadth of content is the fact that the rest of the site isn't, you know, it's not just political. So it's this big sprawling mass. I think, yeah, the bulletin boards go really where the users want it to go. I mean, there are one or two individuals who will try and force it to go in a certain direction. But the reality is, I mean, it's an organic thing, and I've no idea where. I mean, you know, if you ask me when I started, there'll be a Suburban 75 where people be discussing knitting and cake recipes. It isn't exactly hardcore. I mean, it wasn't exactly where I thought I'd go. But, you know, the truth is, even sort of hardcore anarchists need to know how to make a cake occasionally, where to buy cheap fruit. So I haven't got a problem with that. I mean, so I've no idea. You know, it's one of those things where it does its thing, and where it goes, who knows.
Urban 75 Radio. Dazzled by sunlight, befooled by the wind, who are we to blame? Who can object to the burn of the sun? Out of summer.
it's been some very interesting things have happened on your, on the boards and on the, from the website. You had the you were sued by Barney.
Nearly sued.
And then there was when Brian Paddock used the site. I mean, how do you feel about people like Mr. Paddock coming onto the bulletin boards, expressing their opinions?
I think when Paddock joined the boards, I mean, initially when there was another copper who'd been posting abusive stuff, a guy claiming to be a copper, when this character called the Commander first showed up, I was sure it was the same guy, and I was extraordinarily rude. In fact, extraordinarily rude to Brian Paddock. And after I told him to fuck off, he then wrote to me and proved he was actually Brian Paddock. And for a brief time, it really was an insight into how the web could be. There was a wonderful debate in the Brixton Forum where, you know, people, and you know, sort of the anarchists, the lefties, whatever, were saying, you know, I hate coppers, what's the drug policy, it's racist. And, you know, bizarrely, there was a local commander engaging on a local level. It was a fairly wonderful piece of discourse that is rarely seen on the web until the Standard shoved their oar in, of course, and it went rapidly downhill. But it's, you know, I found it fascinating. It's some of the best debates I've seen about police and drugs, I think, anywhere.
So we've got the election coming up, and people are pretty apathetic about voting. People are pretty apathetic about politics in general. Do you think that there's a lot of political discussion on the site and people getting involved in actions through the site? Do you think that the internet is changing the way that people view politics or can become involved in politics?
Well, there's a whole load of talk. I mean, various governments are trying to get the kids whooped up about the internet. I mean, generally, the bottom line is I think a lot of people don't feel particularly involved in the party political process. And I don't think any website, no matter how groovy and funky it looks, is going to change that. I mean, people either are interested or they're not. And basically, at the moment, it's a pretty boring bill of fare. I think, you know, an awful lot of apathy and disillusionment came after the sort of the whole Iraq war, after the Stop the War marches. I mean, the web is a tool of politics, of political exchange. You can, but most politicians can't be asked to actually engage in it. I mean, when I write to my MP, I get a standard letter back with my name on the top, and it's kind of, it doesn't particularly want to make me get involved. So I've no idea. I think it's great for grassroots campaigning. It's great for sort of getting a campaign off the ground. It's a great way of networking between activist groups. Whether it works for major parties, I don't know. I mean, if you look at their sites, they're awful. I mean, they're just absolutely crap and quite dispiriting. And I mean, there may well be, you know, in the future, it may be a better breeding ground for political debate between the major parties. But at the moment, you know, most parties aren't interested because it's hard work and they have to directly deal with people. Whereas it's easy just to schmooze someone in the street, hold up a baby and kind of, you know, handshake a lot of people and shoot off in the party bus. So, yeah, the web is becoming more and more part of everyday life. But I don't actually envisage a future right now, in the near future, where kind of everyone's on the internet and it's suddenly buzzing with politicians and engaging with the population. I can't see it.
Okay, what about other things then? There's a fantastic thread in the music forum on Urban 75 where people post up their mixes, their original music. That's available for download, all sorts of things like that. The internet's definitely having a big effect on the music industry. How might that develop? What do you think can happen there with that?
I mean, I think the web is absolutely amazing for musicians. I mean, when I was in bands, I mean, one band, we worked on this crap job forever to get a 12-inch single pressed, most of which still resides in an attic in Maida Vale, as I recall. I mean, for bands trying to get noticed now, it's a fucking amazing tool because you can just slap your MP3 up and then basically spend all your money on promotion, just do leaflets, hassle people, you know, build a really good website. I think for bands, it gives them a wonderful autonomy away from record companies who I could bore how much I hate them, because, you know, when I was in bands, we had major record deals and they never, you know, we recorded albums that never saw the light of day because of record company wrangling. I think the web is a fantastic tool for musicians. I think it's one of the best things. I mean, the problem is, which is still ongoing, is how record companies are desperately trying to, I mean, still musicians still have to make money. And of course, the problem with MP3s, which is great, it's fantastic for bands to let people hear what they sound like. But ultimately, a band's got to make a few quid, otherwise the band doesn't exist. To pay, you know, they have to pay for the recording. And that is still an issue that kind of needs to be resolved. I mean, people think nothing of freely downloading material, and I'm happy with that. But I guess at some point, you know, a struggling band has to get a couple of pennies back. So that's another issue, of course, which is going to, you know, is still really being resolved.
The future is is no longer in your imagination.
Fostering an open forum.
Never heard anything like it before.
Urban 75 Radio.
What about the tabloid press? We know you like them. How do you feel about them branding Urban 75 as an anarchist website?
Well, it's kind of amusing. I mean, I've actually got a long list at home of different descriptions, and they're all very, you know, generally, if it's a right-wing paper, it'll be something like a site about anarchy and drugs. That was one of my, I think that was The Sun. It's flattering. I mean, come on, it's flattering to be a national newspaper, so I'm happy for them to sort of post up whatever rubbish they like. I mean, the truth is, I don't think there's a single page about anarchy on the entire site, but, you know, I don't mind. The truth is, I mean, it's flattering to be in the national press. In between all the negative stuff, there's been some quite nice stuff as well. What is sort of almost unsettling is some of the sort of style magazines have lavished praise on the site, and that's kind of slightly odd, but I don't really care what the tabloids think, to be honest, because it's not really real world.
You were on Trisha, weren't you?
No, I wasn't on Trisha. I was on Jenny Jones in America, which I'd never heard of, but in America, it's really one of the biggest chat shows of its kind. And that was just a positive, surreal experience. This is back in 1999, and that was just surreal. To be on a sort of primetime American TV show with, shall we say, not the most sophisticated of audiences, just booing and cheering. But no, that was just the best holiday of my life. I turned down Richard and Judy, though. They wanted to interview me about a May Day, and there's no way. I feel uncomfortable enough anyway going on TV, because I've always been at pains to say I don't represent anyone else apart from myself. So, yeah, I'm not going to put myself forward as a spokesman for what goes on at May Day. The notion of going Richard and Judy really would have been the absolute limit. Although a part of me thought it would have been kind of fun as well. But, no, I mean, the times I've done media related to the site, it's usually just where I think it's been something I really care about. I don't really care about Richard and Judy.
Every time you do get some press, every time the site gets some press, there's a big influx of people, get masses of people joining up, signing up to the boards. Are the sites getting too big to manage now? How are they going to grow and develop?
That is a tough question. I mean, the site has grown. I mean, it's funny, I noticed it because every time that I write the new flyer for the next offline, the monthly club, I always put there's a little explanation at the back for people who don't know what the website's about. And every time I notice that the membership's gone up 1,000 people in a month, and that's generally now, the last 3 months, it's 1,000 new people every month. I don't know. I mean, there is a problem. There's a potential problem, but I like to think there's enough of a critical mass of people on the site to stop, one or two new people actually disrupting it to that extent. I mean, it is a problem. It's like, you know, I've got this awful fear. Well, a few people already will say it's not as good as it was. And you get about anything, really. You know, people, in a way, like things when hardly anyone knows about them. It's if a band makes it, you know, people will go, well, they're not as good as they were. I'm sure some will be saying offline isn't as good as it was. But I don't know, you know, I guess it helps because I have no plans. I'm not really bothered if more or less people join, you know, as long as it's fun.
What about the drug forum? How did that start? How did the idea of presenting drug information on the internet via this message board come to be?
It started originally way back sort of in the old, kind of 95, 96, when Leah Betts died. She was one of the first sort of high-level, high-publicity, what was termed an ecstasy casualty. And there was such rubbish written in the press about it, I sort of decided to write up, you know, add a section to the site and just say, well, actually, you know, this is the truth about ecstasy. And the idea was, it's about harm reduction, to say to people, this is what the drug will do, these are the downfalls, these are the health risks, and to be honest, this is the kind of fun you might have as well. And that sort of grew and grew. And I think in the end, I mean, the actual drug section on Urban 25, it's fairly well respected, gets a lot of traffic. And I think that the drug forum on the bulletin boards grew out of that, where people wanted to discuss more, find out more. So it kind of grew out of that, which goes back to what I was saying earlier on about how sort of the old site, in a way, feeds the bulletin boards.
What pisses you off about posters on Urban 75?
Well, I could be here all night. Trollers, people who complain it's not as good as it was. I mean, they may have a point, but don't tell me. People who constantly remind me how shit it is and then keep coming back every day. Or re-registering. People who kind of take it too seriously. I suppose the truth is, 99% of the people, are, you know, they're no problem at all. People just get on with it. I mean, there's over 5,000 posts every day now. And of those posts, maybe two or three will kind of annoy me a bit. which isn't bad, but I guess a lot I'm not looking at. So the things, I guess, on the board, it's the obvious things where people just attack you when you think it's unfair, when people endlessly criticise the moderator's decisions. That's a bit of a pain in the arse. I mean, they might have a point, but you know, I think they've got to realise it's really running the board just can take an awful lot of time and we're not getting paid for it. And I guess that's, it's the whingers, I guess. The whingers.
Right, you talked about people with multiple IDs, people registering more than once. But there is a myth on the internet that when you started up originally, probably with the football website, to populate it, you created multiple IDs.
Well, I'll confess a certain amount here. Whenever you buy a brand new magazine, issue one, have you noticed how the letters page already has three letters in it? And you're thinking, well, it's a brand new magazine. How on earth do they know where to send it to? The truth was, when I started the first proper bulletin board, this is in 99, wherever it was, I was so embarrassed of having a completely empty space. I actually, and this is kind of before you actually had to register, so it didn't, yeah, there was just full of people under different names. So I made about three or four posts, which it wasn't quite so embarrassing, because I had this awful notion of it being an empty bulletin board for like forever. And I thought, well, at least if I put up four posts, it won't be empty forever. But I can say I've never, ever posted for the last 4 years under any other name apart from my own. If I did, the mods would know straight away. And I can't be asked, to be honest. I mean, it's enough work without messing about like that. So there are some posters we know on the boards who are under different names, and we observe them from afar. Some have good reasons. Some will say, you know, if they're in a relationship, it's broken up, and they really don't want the other person to know what's happening. So that's okay. There's one or two we know are being a bit sneaky, but we're watching them.
Why 75?
I wish I had a good answer to this. The truth was, and it's a crap story, a friend of mine was a filmmaker, was around my flat one night, and he wanted to come up with a name for his film company. I mean, he's like an independent filmmaker. And he came up with names that were so rubbish. I mean, so one was like Shoestring Productions, just so awful. And I suggested kind of being mindful when I was in a band of having a name that sounded all hip for a while and then becomes really embarrassing, outdated. So, you know, probably back in 95, Cyber Assight would have been a really cool name, but now, of course, it'd be embarrassing. So I just said, you know, why don't you make up a name that means nothing but could be anything? It could be a clothing brand, it could be a book, like Urban 75. And he said, that's shit. So off he went. And I wrote it down just at the time. And next morning I thought, I like that. And that's it. I can retrospectively make up stuff, but the truth is there's no great story to it. Or is there?
Okay, I've got a really important question for you. Custard creams or hobnobs?
Hobnobs. Veggie hobnobs.
That was an interview with Mike Slocum, the editor and head honcho of Urban 75. During the interview, the editor mentioned the role of the internet in providing musicians with a free method of distributing their music. All of the music that we play on Urban 75 Radio has been provided to us by the artists themselves. If you are a musician and you'd like your work played on the radio, then please send us an email via the address on the website. The track played during the interview was Bats in the Belfry by Rob Sharples, who's a Bristol-based singer-songwriter who appeared at Offline last Thursday. And for those of you who don't know, every month the editor organises a free club night called Offline, which takes place at the Dog Star in Brixton on the last Thursday of the month. And at the last Offline, there were 28 acts playing with a mixture of live music, DJs, we had the fastest rapper in the world, and some of the finest cabaret and poetry on the circuit. So we took our recording equipment down to the Dog Star and recorded some of the acts, whilst also dragging some posters into corners and alcoves for some impromptu interviews. So if you couldn't make it, or if you want to hear it again, we've got an hour of Offline coming up next.